runners. I'm your host, Finn Melanson, and this is the Run to the Top podcast, the podcast dedicated to making you a better runner with each and every episode. We are created and produced by the expert team of coaches at runnersconnect.net, where you can find the best running information on the internet, as well as training plans to fit every runner and every budget. What if you could actually run your best past age 40 and get fitter and stronger? Now, we are not here selling the latest product promising the fountain of youth. If you started running in your teens or in your 20s, you are not going to be able to race or train at the same intensity or pace as you did back then. Just because your times aren't going to be the same doesn't mean that you can't run your very best and have the same sense of pride and accomplishment as you did when you were younger. In fact, you might even find more satisfaction in your running as a master. And some runners can run their best past age 40. And that's what we're here to learn today. We've put together some of the best interviews we've conducted over the past 10 years from master's coaches, researchers, and record holders to help you better understand how to adapt your training as you age. We'll go over the mental obstacles we face as master's runners, from perhaps not being able to reach our previous best times to wondering what's our potential in overcoming the fear of injury. Of course, we're also going to get specific workouts, training schedules, strength schedules, and more from some of the fastest and most accomplished master's runners in the world. And the best part is, in this podcast, we are boiling everything down to just the best advice and words of wisdom. So, if you're ready to learn how to make the most of your running as you age, today's interview roundup is just what you need. Today's episode is sponsored by Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers. Their industry-leading magnesium supplement is organic and contains all seven forms of magnesium, which helps you sleep better and reduces stress. Bioptimizers are having a Black Friday special offer from November 21st through November 29th, where you can get Magnesium Breakthrough and all of Bioptimizers' best-in-class products for 25% off. Before we get to our conversation, if you're recovering from a race, then you want to make sure you are maximizing your nutrition to help you recover faster, and one of the best ways to do this is with Heal from Amino Co. Later in the episode, I'll tell you more about Heal and how it can help you with your race recovery, or you can check out the research at aminoco.com/RTTT. First up is accomplished master's athlete and coach, Kathy Utschneider. Despite not taking up running until her 40s, Kathy has won 9 USA Track and Field National Age Group Championships, a silver medal at the Nike World Masters Games, and a gold medal at the North American World Regional Championships. She was ranked number 5 in the world in her age group in the mile back in 2005. In this clip, she's going to talk about something all masters runners fear, injuries, and how to break through your mental barriers.
I have found when coaching masters athletes that many of them have a fear of injury, and they don't reach their potential because maybe they're hearing something in their heads that they should be in the rocking chair, like you were saying. They're afraid to go faster. They're afraid to get injured. What advice would you give that athlete?
Don't be afraid. You know, don't be afraid. And you asked me earlier, that question brings me back to, and I will answer that question, an earlier question when you asked about what's the difference between coaching masters and coaching open runners. And I said recovery. Well, another thing is, you know, a greater focus on strength training. I'm certified several times over in different kinds of strength training. That's really essential, as is cross training. Because as you know, we lose a half a pound of muscle every year after 30. And if you have something like I've got right now an injury, I was hoping to run the Fifth Avenue Mile in New York next weekend. Well, I'm not running it because I've had arthritis for the last 6 years, I would say. And so my leg is more, my knee is more sensitive to intensive training. And strength training will help with joints. Mm-hmm. So what I say is, you know, life is not a dress rehearsal. We can't live in fear. One thing you can do is tell her, you know, not to train at ultimate race pace for one thing. Sure. I mean, you vary the training, right? You vary the workouts. So you may increase the running, the workouts gradually over 3 weeks, and then you have cutback weeks, right? Mm-hmm. But I think telling somebody to run at never your maximum, but pushing the envelope in just tiny, tiny little increments so that they build gradually, you know, okay, I can shake hands with speed. I'm just going to shake hands with a tiny bit of speed at first.
Oh, I love that phrase.
Make the goals tiny. That's what we do at Move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it raises the confidence level. Each little accomplishment makes you feel stronger and better, both physically and mentally.
And to that point, the major reason I founded Move, which I live by and which I will live by for my whole life, is that it's based on the point that I feel it's very easy for us to drift in life, for us to lose a sense of time. And when you have goals, incremental goals, short-term goals, you're very aware of time. And for example, your runner who might be afraid to go very fast, well, your coaching could help her see that you're not, it's going to take a while to get perspective on that and to get comfortable with. You don't have to do something right away. And I think another piece to the puzzle of having a life which applauds every paragraph of our lives is about having perspective on ourselves, which coaching helps with. I can't have perspective on myself. I don't know whether you have perspective on yourself, but it really helps to talk to someone else. And I'd rather spend my money on being the best I can be and being happy and having perspective than being, you know, overwhelmed with everything and all the possibilities and not make deliberate decisions which say, hey, this is me, this is what I want to do.
Next up is Carolee Walker, who's going to teach us the most important lessons she's learned about health, running, and aging.
What are the most important lessons you've learned about health, running, and aging?
You know, there's the physical benefits as we age, and it's counterintuitive. There are plenty of people out there who, you know, will say, I just need to relax. I've been working for years. I've raised my family. I've volunteered in the community. I don't need to exercise because I don't need to push myself. I've earned the right to hang out on the couch. That is actually not what we want to be doing because we want to be able to enjoy our older years. We want to be able to do all the things that we did, the little things. I don't even mean the big things. I mean, like, you know, being able to go to a concert and stand for an hour instead of sitting. Those are the little things that we want to be able to continue to do. I interviewed a performance psychologist a few times who reminded me that through evolution, we are wired to sort of protect ourselves. And we are wired to crave sitting on the couch. That is how we're built.
Right.
In order to be able to crave exercising, which is what we know is good for us, we have to start to develop a habit to do it. And that can take 6 months. And it's sometimes it's very hard to sort of follow through on the 6 months. But it is worth it because ultimately, as we get older, there's nothing but benefits from exercise. It can be as simple as walking. Running would be great. There are plenty of people who run, you know, into their 80s, you know, doing some of the modifications that you and I just talked about. But there is no one that I can think of who doesn't benefit from moving around, especially as we age.
Yeah.
You know, one of the other benefits from yoga for me was learning how to develop a mantra. And that's one of the things that's helped me get to the habit forming part of exercise. I use it for food as well. You know, it's simple when you're running, you're going to, you know, as you approach a hill, you can say to yourself, it's a hill, get over it. You know, some people will say, you know, I can do this, I can do this. But for me, like, especially with food, which, you know, we naturally crave, you know, the donut and the bagel, but that may not be what is actually best for our bodies as we age. I will have a mantra and say to myself, you know, I'm quoting someone else, so I'm plagiarizing, you know, nothing tastes as good as skinny feels, which is for me on a small frame. It's not about how I look, it's about how I feel. But I've tried to tell myself as I get older that it's actually okay if I don't have donuts anymore. I've had so many in my life. I don't need any more in my future. What I need in my future is the food that's going to keep me healthy. What I need in my future is the exercise that's going to help me feel good. But it becomes very, very challenging because we're not naturally wired, especially as we age. We're not naturally wired to get out there. That's where Runners Connect and other online communities right now can really help, because even if you're an introvert, the social community of being around people who are your people, like people who are,
yes,
you know, getting a
tribe
group of people to go on a walk or getting or joining, even if once we start to get through this crisis and we have races again, if you don't feel ready to do a race, volunteer. I mean, you get plenty of exercises, a volunteer handing out water,
nice,
and
yes,
handing out, you know, high fives, but you're getting that benefit of being around your people who are also enjoying moving around. So I highly recommend, you know, taking advantage of the social aspects of running.
With that helpful advice, let's now turn our attention to distinguished writer and 1968 Boston Marathon champion, Ambie Burfoot. Ambie has been at the forefront of elite distance running for decades and is the perfect example of someone who transitioned from elite running to finding joy, motivation, and success as a master's runner. He's going to talk about the key ingredients for runners to incorporate into their schedules besides just running and how to adapt your nutrition as you get older.
Listen, I do everything from strength training, which does not make me any stronger. I would love to be a kick-ass, muscle-bound guy at some point in my life, but apparently it's never going to happen. But I'm still, in my retirement, having more time, I find myself going to the gym two or three times a week and going through 20 minutes of strength training while I'm at the gym doing other cross training. And I like it. I like the routine. I like the change. I like that I don't know anything about strength training. So if I'm lifting 40 pounds, which is what I'm often lifting, I don't know that somebody else is lifting 400 pounds or that that's what I should be doing. I don't compare myself to anyone else in the strength training. And you know what? I like walking a whole lot.
Ooh.
And I have one walking buddy here now, and he often walk 6 to 10 miles a day, and I'll go for a 6 mile walk with him occasionally when we can match schedules. And amazing to say, I thought I would never discover a digital device in my entire life, but I did discover podcasts 2 years ago, and I
Yay.
Find that I enjoy listening to podcasts while running and walking. I know other people, or I think other people listen in their cars or on the, I don't know where people live, on the treadmill, I was going to say. But I listen while I'm walking and running, and I listen to running podcasts and science podcasts and news podcasts and, you know, the stuff I'm interested in. And I find that's a nice diversion and increases my motivation to get out there a little. I think the big thing for everyone is that when you're not running, in my case, 120 miles a week or whatever someone else was running at age 30, and you're running one-fifth of that, you can't eat as much, sad to say. And we all need to learn to adjust our diets. The science of nutrition is endlessly fascinating and endlessly bottomless. I mean, just stuff every day that you can't tell whether make sense or doesn't make sense for you. But the basics are pretty simple, aren't they? Somebody said to me the other day, don't buy anything in plastic in the grocery store. And that's actually my aim when I go to the grocery store now. I had not quite formulated it that way, but I like to go to checkout without anything that's wrapped in plastic. I think it's probably true that if you focus on real foods and whole foods and avoid as much processed food as you possibly can, and if you keep your weight stable, if you maintain a healthy weight, that's probably 98% of the battle. And whether you get 15% protein or 20% protein, and even the low-carb diet versus the high-carb diet, people seem to be able to adapt to a lot of different things and perform quite well. I don't think endurance athletes are ever going to stray too far from a carb-based diet, but we should certainly aim for healthy carbs, and we should certainly aim for stable weight.
Do you know if you're getting enough magnesium? Because 4 out of 5 Americans aren't. And that's a big problem because magnesium is involved in more than 600 biochemical reactions in your body. Specifically for us runners, magnesium plays a critical role in energy production, muscle recovery, improved sleep, and bone development. Today, I want to talk to you about the most common signs to look for that could indicate you are magnesium deficient. And listen carefully to the end because there is a Black Friday special offer happening, and this could be exactly what you need. So here we go. Are you irritable or anxious? Are you waking up tired even on the days you get enough sleep? Do you experience muscle cramps or twitches? Do you have high blood pressure? Do you find yourself struggling to recover between runs more than normal? Now here's what most people don't know. Taking just any magnesium supplement won't solve your problems because most supplements use the cheapest kinds that your body can't use or absorb. That's why we exclusively recommend Magnesium Breakthrough. It's the only full-spectrum magnesium supplement with 7 unique forms of magnesium that your body can actually absorb and use. Here comes the best part. The makers of Magnesium Breakthrough, Bioptimizers, are having a Black Friday special offer from November 21st to the 29th, where you can get Magnesium Breakthrough and all of Bioptimizers' best-in-class products with 25% off. Just go to bioptimizers.com/run to the top, and when you enter code RUN10 at checkout, you'll get 25% off any order. This is the best time to stock up on the products you love and try new ones. All Bioptimizers supplements are best-in-class. If for some reason you feel differently, you can get a full refund, no questions asked. They are so confident that they offer a 365-day money-back guarantee. So do it while supplies last, and don't miss that November 29th deadline. Again, the link is bioptimizers.com/run to the top, and when you enter code RUN10, you will get 25% off any order. Recovering from long races like the half marathon is an often neglected part of the training process for most runners. Unfortunately, if you don't properly recover from your race, you'll increase your injury risk, you'll increase the total recovery time, and you will limit your long-term potential, making it harder to break your PR and stay healthy. In addition to taking it easy, optimizing your nutrition is one of the most effective ways to speed up your recovery. For you to recover faster, you must provide the body with the nutrients it needs to accelerate muscle repair. And that's what Amino Company's product Heal does better than almost anything on the market. Heal is designed to reduce recovery times and improve physical function after training and races by accelerating muscle repair while helping maintain a healthy inflammatory response. In fact, a recent clinical trial compared the use of Heal with high-quality whey protein. Heal showed a 3 times larger muscle response to whole body protein synthesis and breakdown, which led to reduced muscle protein breakdown and an increased muscle protein synthesis compared to whey. In layman's terms, this means participants had less muscle breakdown and faster muscle repair when using Heal. If you're looking for a nutritional advantage when it comes to recovering from your running injury or your daily training, I recommend you give Heal a try. We've even got a special offer for you where you can save 30% and get a free gift by using the code RC30. Just head to aminoco.com/RTTT. That's aminoco.com/RTTT. And use the code RC30 at checkout to save 30% and get your free gift. Wow. Awesome lessons learned from one of the original pioneers of the sport who's still going great today. Now let's hear from Margaret Webb, one of the most successful 50-plus athletes in the world, on what a typical week of training looks like, as well as her thoughts on speed work.
Well, when I was in my super fit year, and I was training for what I wanted to do through that year was to set personal bests at every race distance. I wanted to get down to a really, really healthy weight that, you know, was better than when I was a varsity athlete at University of Toronto. I played ice hockey. So I was really working on getting not just a runner fast, but overall fit. You know, I spoke to one physiologist at the beginning of the term, and he said, at the beginning of my year, and he said, your goal of getting super fast or as fast as you can is not necessarily equal getting overall fit, because, you can lean yourself right down as a runner and focus only on running and improve your speed, but doesn't mean you're going to be like have the kind of the muscle mass that you need to be healthy all over. And so I made a decision that, well, I want to be healthy all over. So what I did is I ran 5 days a week. And I worked out 2 days a week in the gym. I lifted weights and I lifted weights for both my legs, which I think helped me get faster, and also for my upper body, because I didn't want to end up being a skinny runner with no, really a frail upper body and not being able to, open a jar of, whatever. So I wanted to be overall strong, and I also wanted to improve my flexibility and my balance, because of course balance is a big thing that people struggle with when they age. And try to stand on one foot, and if you're struggling a little bit, wow, you've got balance problems. You should be able to do that relatively easily. And so this is what a typical week looked like for me. On Sunday I would do my long run with my club, and so that could be anywhere from 20 kilometers to 35 kilometers, or I guess trying to do a mileage translation, like 10 miles to 22 miles. Mm-hmm. And then on Monday I would go to the gym, and I would lift weights and do some yoga and do a lot of core work. So I wanted to be really, really strong in my core for, about an hour and 15 minutes. And then on the way to and from the gym, I would do plyometrics. So, the hopping, and because I live about, not quite a kilometer from the gym, maybe a kilometer, half a mile. And so it's a really good distance to sort of do those hops along the sidewalks.
Oh, you mean literally doing them to the gym?
Or yeah.
Oh, interesting.
So people passing me on the sidewalk would kind of laugh and smile along, to and from the gym doing plyometrics. So that was Monday. Tuesday, I would do another 6 or 7 mile, 8 mile run with a Tuesday morning running group, and we meet at 6:30 a.m. And I'd finish that off with maybe a couple of hills maybe. I always finish my runs off with some yoga.
Okay.
For stretching flexibility. Wednesday, I would do both a run, so a shorter run, and a gym workout, and that was really tough. Like, I found that my toughest day, because I was adding a whole new day to my training, but I was also doing a double that day. And then Thursday I would work out with my club. So Thursday night would be about an hour and a half of speed training, hill training, tempo work, a really, really tough run workout. that I could, I struggled to do those kinds of workouts by myself. So it's really great to do it with a group of my running friends. Friday would be my rest day, although I do yoga for flexibility and that sort of thing. Saturday, I would do another run. So it could be 6, 7, 8 miles, 9 miles, 10 miles. And also, and I'd follow that up with a trip to the yoga studio. So I'd do one yoga session a week, and then I'm back to my Sunday long run. So that was my, so that was really intense, that, but that was my super fit year. I don't think any people need to do, you know, go quite overboard like that to maintain fitness or to get fit. But this was a big project that I was doing to really stall the clock, turn it back. So now this year I'm not on that kind of like quite such a frenetic training routine. I'm running 4 days a week now, but I'm still going to the gym twice. And I try to fit in yoga once a week in there somewhere.
That's good. And so you really saw the importance of doing those supplemental activities. Like we talk about that a lot, how important it is. You can't just run, especially as you get older. You can't just go out the door and run. You have to do those, you know, you talked about the plyometrics, but also the strength and conditioning, not only in your legs, but in your arms as well to assist with your running. So it's good to hear that you see that as important as well.
I found that for me, I don't have the world's best running gait because of my flat feet. And so if I only run and don't do the cross training, if I don't do the yoga, if I don't do the weight training, I very quickly get injured. And I discovered that in my running career. In order to support the distance of a marathon, I know I need to do the yoga and I need to do the weight training to keep my muscles balanced and strong. And it also improved my running economy. Like I talk about this in my book, where I was doing kind of speed trials to sort of see where my heart rate was at and then how fast I could do, you know, a kilometer or whatever. And then I tested that later on after I did a couple of months of weight work. And I could run, you know, at the same speed, say, but my heart rate was much, much lower. Because of, I believe, well, both the marathon training, but also when you think if you have stronger legs from lifting weights, you can spring and propel yourself forward much easier with much, much less oxygen intake.
Interesting. That is pretty much all I have, but we'll actually go back to that topic just in a moment from some questions we have from our listeners. But I just wanted to mention before I transition over to that, that's all I had. But people can purchase your book, Older, Faster, Stronger, What Women Runners Can Teach Us About Living Younger, Longer. And, you know, we talked earlier about you would prefer people to purchase this from independent bookstores. So if you can get out there and buy it from a local store, that always is preferable. But I will put a link up to purchase the book online in the notes for the day. So you can find that on runnersconnect.net/RC45. And so, yep, as I mentioned, that's all my questions for the day, but we have a few from our listeners. So along the lines of what we were just talking about, Deborah Hexel would like to know, what can older runners do to increase that mileage beyond what they may have done in the past without risking injury? I think a lot of that is what you talked about, the yoga, the plyometrics, the strength training. Is there anything else you would add?
Yeah, well, in order to up your distance, don't be in any big rush. Go, you know, the rule of thumb, you know, 5% increase a week. Definitely not more than a 10% increase in mileage a week. I think for older runners, the weight training is really critical and the yoga is really critical to keep muscles balanced and limber and flexible. And, you know, listening to your body, that was what a lot of the older runners told me, is they said, listen to your body. I spoke to Krista Delgado, who's the world's fastest 60-year-old sprinter. And Carla Delgado, I'm sorry. And she was working out. She was sprinting one day, lifting weights the next day, sprinting the next day, lifting weights, sprinting. So she'd do three runs a week and then the weight training. And she said, you know what? I found as I got older, it was better for me to do my run and my weight day together and take a rest day. So she has sort of incorporated a little bit more rest, recovery time, active recovery by walking or that sort of thing. So I think that if you're feeling trashed, if you're feeling not, well, this is a hard, or I'm just feeling a little bit too exhausted, don't be afraid to take a recovery day, you know, and just back off the activity and just do a walk, do some yoga, and limber up. You know, it's not the goal of these women, it was to be at it for the rest of your life. And so almost their entire strategy was around not injuring themselves. Because as soon as you get injured, then you've got downtime. You can't run. And then it's much harder to come back and build your fitness up again. And I think that's kind of become a mantra for me too. If I feel anything niggling, nagging, it's like back right off and fix that. Don't turn it into some like strain that's going to bother you or put you right out of running.
Mm-hmm. No, that's great advice. And that's not just for people who are older runners, but that's for everyone really. We need to learn to listen to your body. And I guess that's one thing, if you do start running a bit later in life, you're not going to learn that lesson as a young adult. You still have to learn that lesson to listen to your body. So a question from Christopher Jones, who has already run a very fast time, a 3:32 in the marathon. Do you think it's realistic to expect to be able to increase performance after 60? And he wanted to know if you are running at a higher level during your earlier years, do you think it's realistic? When should you start accepting that, you know, maybe your times aren't going to keep going forward, and how do you get around that?
Well, I'm not an expert sports physiologist. Mm-hmm. So I would say, you know, there's this 10-year rule of thumb that pretty much whatever age you start at, you can increase your speed for about 10 years. And so for me, starting at age 42, or, you know, when did I really start seriously training? You know, was it 48? You know, so I don't know. I have a 10-year window of improvement. So I don't know what his running history is. Sorry, who was it again?
It's just one of our athletes on Runners Connect. It was just just a general question.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think, you know, apply that 10-year window. So can you get faster after 60? Absolutely. A friend of mine in my club who started distance running in her 50s has had her personal best times in her 60s.
That's great.
You know, so she was definitely able to get faster. But how long that will continue?
Mm-hmm.
I do think that one of the things that we're discovering with older athletes is that if we continue the training, like if we continue putting in the mileage, but not just the mileage, but the intensity, like those tempo runs, the interval training, that our speed will fall off far less than we expected.
So people shouldn't be afraid of doing the faster running and the tempos and the hills and the sprints, even if you are, you know, getting older. You don't need to be afraid of those for injury reasons. I mean, no more than anyone else, really.
Well, in fact, I would advocate it. I was speaking to one researcher in my book who specializes in human growth hormone, like natural growth hormone that is secreted in your body, and it's provoked by fast, like tempo running and sprinting. And he advocates that we should be, when it comes to older athletes or when it comes to exercise for seniors, that he advocates that we should be focused on exercise that provokes the release of growth hormone. Because growth hormone repairs your muscles, it repairs every cell in your body. And so if we just do the long, slow runs, yes, we're going to secrete growth hormone to repair muscles, et cetera. But it's like putting the hammer down every once in a while that will provoke a release of growth hormone for up to 4 hours after, like say, an interval run. But the caution is that you don't just throw yourself into it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You ease into it.
Yeah.
You ease into everything. Don't get injured. When I was going through my year, I spent some training sessions on the track with sprinters, you know, trying to understand how to become a faster runner and improve my gait. And I knew that I could only sprint at about 90% of my capability because my muscles just weren't attuned to sprinting. And so I could, you know, and I was really watching it. It's like the last thing I wanted to do was sprint full out and get injured. So you just have to really watch your body, be careful, and slowly build up to it.
Next on our interview lineup is Pete McGill. Pete is one of the most accomplished masters runners in the history of the United States. He's the oldest runner to ever break 15 minutes in the 5K, running 14:45 at the age of 49, and he's not slowing down as he became the fastest ever American over 50 on the roads at the 5K, 15:02, and at the 10K in 31:11. He's going to talk about his approach to speed work as well as what he'd tell his younger self about training and racing.
Well, it's interesting you bring this up. I did another call on this very topic. One of the things I pointed out is that if you do a comparison of records of like young American sprinters and young American distance runners, and then look through the ages, you know, as they get older, all the way up to like age 75 or 80, you'll find that sprinters, that masters sprinter maintain a higher percentage of what they could run when they were young than masters distance runners. Distance runners actually lose their ability more than sprinters. Okay, well, now this doesn't make a whole lot of sense because really when we start to atrophy with our muscle fiber, it's our fast twitch fiber that atrophies. It's not our slow twitch fiber. You know, we can lose, you know, 1% of our fast twitch fiber per year. Okay, so why are sprinters who are supposedly atrophying maintaining what they've got going better than us?
Right.
And here's the reason why. Is because distance runners don't like to do work for fast twitch fiber and intermediate twitch fiber, and most of them give it up. Most of them start thinking, hey, you know, I ran 80 to 100 miles a week when I was young. Okay, very competitive ones. If you weren't so competitive, I ran, you know, 30 to 50 miles a week. But the point is they go, and I did just fine. So that's what I like to do. I like to go out on my Sunday runs in the hills. I like to go out for my distance run with the gang every day. You know, I like to go out and commune with nature and have my mystical experience. But the problem is when you're doing that, you're working slow twitch fiber. And even on the longer runs that eventually recruit their way to intermediate fiber, you know, after you've like completed your slow twitch fiber, you still aren't working that much of your intermediate. Okay, so what happens when you don't use it? You lose it. Okay, if you actually go out and work that intermediate and fast twitch fiber, you're going to find you don't lose as much speed as you thought you were going to lose. And if you look at some of the masters runners who are coming now, a guy like Nolan Shahid. Now, okay, we get older, we get slower, okay? But Nolan Shahid ran a 4:25 mile at age 51, you know? He just ran a 4:50 mile at age 61. Okay, he's a guy who's worked speed the whole time. I've made speed a big part of what I do. And, you know, I was running, you know, when I was 46, I ran a 14:34 5,000. You know, that's off of, you know, you can't run those times off slow twitch. You have to have speed. And if you keep those workouts and speed, doesn't mean I'm going to go out and run some fast mile repeats. It means I'm going to go out and I'm going to run some hill sprints. It means I'm going to go out and I'm going to run some hard 200s or 300s. You know, it's more about engaging the muscle fiber than it is about thinking about pace or whatever. But you have to go out and engage that muscle fiber. This afternoon, you know, I did a nice easy run this morning, and this afternoon I'm going out with my, you know, my son, who's now an outside linebacker for College of the Canyons. And we're going to go run about 70-meter hill sprints up a steep hill up in the mountains. And then we're going to turn around and we're going to run 100-meter hard hill sprints down. Now, I'm going to finish about 40 yards behind him. I'm going to be working the heck out of my fast twitch and my intermediate twitch. And because I do that, it's not going to atrophy. Study after study shows that even, I mean, they did a study that showed even 80-year-old who took up a resistance training program could rebuild some fast twitch, or could build up fast twitch. Now, once the fiber's gone, it's pretty much gone, but we can build up the myofilaments within the fibers. So if 80-year-olds can do it, we can do it. So a lot of the loss of speed really has to do with how we train and not to do with the physiological process of shedding the vascular fiber.
Right, right. I'm so glad to hear you say that because, you know, like I said, I work with a lot of masters athletes, and that's exactly how we approach things, especially once, you know, in terms of me working with them, they have, you know, I realize they have a sufficient base, is we actually start to do a lot of speed development work. And one of the things that I find is that, you know, they're often very nervous at first, and they ought to be because they haven't done it in for so long. You know, I say, oh, we're going to do some 200s and you're going to run the last 100 absolutely as fast as you can. And they kind of look at me like I'm crazy, you know, like, but that's how, you know, you slowly start building that process back. And it's great for me to hear from a master's runner, such an experienced runner that you do the same thing and that it worked really well for you. Cause obviously, you know, the results are speaking for themselves. So.
Yeah. And it's not just me, you know, one of the things, you know, a lot of my when I first started keeping a blog a couple of years ago, and then when I started writing for Running Times, I was always writing my secrets, you know, the training secrets. And my competitors would go, you know, it's really nice that you're out there running fast, but we're not quite sure why you're telling us all how to do it too. I'm like, you know, my running, what I want to run, is not in any way, you know, disrupted or challenged by helping you to run faster. Mm-hmm. You know, in fact, keeping people running well, keeping people, you know, fast, gives me a peer group to train with. You know, what's racing if you don't have your peer group to be out there training with? And the fact is, you know, as soon as a couple of us are throwing down the gauntlet saying, okay, I know a lot of guys turn 40 and they run hard, but then we all fall off a cliff around 43 or 44 and we can't run anymore. So a few of us decided that wasn't going to happen. You know, and to be perfectly honest, Nolan Shaheed, who's 10 years older than me, laid down the gauntlet a long time ago. And we all said, well, you know, Nolan can do it. And, you know, when I first turned 45, the American record for the 5K, and I'm talking on the roads now, not on the track, mm-hmm. The American record for 5K on the roads was 1507. And, you know, that was for the age 45 to 49 age group.
Okay.
You know, within a couple of years, Dennis Simonides had run 1445. I'd run 1449. Another guy just ran 1449 too. You know, if you sit down and you say, no, this doesn't have to happen. It happens when you give up because you think it's inevitable. You know, when you go, well, now it's time. Now I'm going to fall off the cliff. And we're proving you don't fall off that cliff. Like I said, I appreciate you talking to me and commending me on what I've done. But if I do it right, you know, and if I can get the message out, the times I'm running now, people will laugh at and go, what, that was considered good? You know, I want the next generation to kick ass mm-hmm. at the times. And I think they can, because a lot of what we're doing is trailblazing, you know, and it's funny how trailblazing has led us right back to the theories of training we should have been paying attention to when we were younger.
You know, if you could go back and tell your younger self one thing, and I kind of have a feeling what this will be, but you know, what would you try to impart on your younger self that you wish that you would have paid attention to when you were younger?
As far as running goes.
Yeah.
Oh, boy, would I have to have a talk with myself. We'd have to set aside a weekend. You know, rent a hotel, and I wouldn't let him out that door until I talked to him for about 8 hours straight. Quite obviously, and I'm going to use a different word here that we haven't used before, although we've hinted at the whole way through. I'm going to use two words. Maybe it'll be up to three in a while. You know the way inflation goes. Patience and confidence. Okay? Have patience. Let things happen. Don't think that training, you know, when people, one of the things when people come to me, you know, as a coach and they want me to help them train, they invariably say, you know, yeah, I've got a race in like 3 weeks and I really want to do well with it. Mm-hmm. And what I always tell them is, say, well, now, it takes me about 3 months before I'm even ready to start training for something. It takes me about 3 months of preparation. I said, unless you're a whole lot better than I am, I just can't get you there any slower or any faster. Running isn't about this week. It's not about this month. It's not about this year. You know, good training is It's a lifestyle. It's something when you look out in the foreseeable future, you have to say, that's going to be my lifestyle. It's going to be my lifestyle this year. It's going to be my lifestyle next year and the year after that and the year after that. You know, there are going to be ups, there are going to be downs, but I can see way over there. I can see the mountaintop. And I know that between here and that mountaintop, I'm going to have to ford some rivers and, you know, cross a lake, and I'm going to have to climb a tree to gain my bearings, and I'm going to trip at some point and twist my ankle, you know, and I'm going to have to run from some wolves, and whatever I'm going to have to do, those things are going to come up. But I can see the mountaintop. And as long as I can see the mountaintop, I can get there. Okay? So patience. The mountaintop's there. Confidence. I will get there. If I run into that stream, I'll find a way to get across it. If I see that lake, I'll cross it. You know, if I run into wolves, I'll get away from them. If I sprain my ankle, I'll recover. And when you see it in those terms, as something out there waiting to be grasped, you know, something you can see in the distance, and you understand that it's a long way from here to there. There is no shortcut from here to the top of that mountain, you know?
Yep.
Then you go, okay, now I'm patient. Now I can get there. And that's what I tell my younger self. My younger self thought if he wasn't where he needed to be in 6 months, then it could never happen. You know, God knows in high school, guys trained 6 months. You know, Jeff Nelson, who I ran against in high school and made one of my good friends to this day, Jeff Nelson started training in the second half of his sophomore year. By the time he was a junior, he was state champion. Mm-hmm. 2.5 years after starting running, he ran 8:30. What was it?
8:36. Yeah.
Mile.
Yeah.
You know, he held the record for 29 years. Okay. Well, Jeff got there 2.5 years, and I haven't. Then all is lost. What was me? You know. And that's not the truth. You know, people get where they're going at different paces. And, you know, a lot of the runners who eventually become, you know, our next Bill Rogers from back in my day or whatever, they didn't get there in 2.5 years. They didn't get there in 4.5 years. You know, it took a decade for them to get the fitness they needed. But they incrementally built, and they got better. And the next year, they were a little better. And eventually, I got to pop up here.
No problem.
There we go. And eventually, if you stick with it, if you have confidence that you will get there, and if you enjoy it as part of it, you can't get too caught up in every little battle, you know, then it's amazing where you can end up. I've never seen a runner train for 2 to 3 years without a break, you know, and the only way you can do that is not by doing stupid things. But who can suddenly have a physiological revelation where their body changed. Their body changed underneath them. Mm-hmm. You know, where suddenly it's like, great, things just got easier. What happened? And the fact is it takes that long.
Yep.
And you've got to believe it's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's the main thing. And it's hard to say. It's hard to believe when you aren't there. You know, but I still remember 25 years ago, my first head coaching job, you know, in high school, and getting my athletes together on the first day, and I said, this is the most important thing I can tell you. I'm going to tell it to you right now. You have to believe you can win. Does everyone here think they can win? And none of them thought they could win. But here's the thing. I said, once you know, not believing, once you know you can win, whatever that is, winning is, you know, defined differently for different people. But once you know you can do that, then you'll do all the steps it takes to get there. Once you have the belief that that's there, you will do the distance. You will do your recovery. You'll do your stretching. You'll eat right. You'll sleep right. Because you'll believe it's leading up to something you know can happen. And that's my message. It can happen if you do it right.
Finally, we have another Masters World Record holder on deck for you, Kathy Martin. Kathy has held or still holds U.S. and world records in every event from the 800 meters to the 50K. She's graded at close to 100% in almost every distance she has competed in and has been featured by the New York Times. Kathy is going to talk about the importance of listening to your body at any age and what she does to stay healthy and prevent muscle loss as a master's runner.
So speaking of that, you have become very good at listening to your body. And in an interview you did with the New York Times, you talked about scratching out of the USATF championships in March 2012 to prevent further damage to your knee. Why would you say it's so important to listen to your body about those kind of things when, you know, often as runners, we can ignore those and push through and think, oh, it's going to be okay. But how have you learned to listen to those little warning signs?
Well, I think, you know, the more you run, or you are in tune with your body, you know how, you know what fuels your body, you know when you're fatigued. Like, I can tell when I'm on the track, let's say if I'm doing a track workout and I'm breathing hard, or I'm working too hard for where I am in the workout. You know, my husband, who's also my coach, has just pulled me off the track and just said, not today, you know, you're just not there. You have to listen to it. With regard to when the New York Times did the article, I had been having issues with my knee. I hadn't had an MRI. I thought it was just muscular. It never felt like severe pain. I never thought, I just couldn't run. It was like there was a disconnect between the knee area and the brain. It was just like it wasn't connecting. The brain was telling it to run, but it couldn't run. And we got to Bloomington for the, I think that was the indoor nationals. And I went out to warm up, and I just, the disconnect was just there. So it's like, it was one of the hardest things I think I've ever done, was just to admit defeat and just say, I can't do it. But I knew the long-term effect was, you know, my goal is to run for my whole life. And so I knew that if I pushed it there, even if I was able to get on the track and do it long-term, I knew there was damage being done, because I just, the pain was there. It just wouldn't let me do it.
Yeah, and that's good that you were able to listen and know that, even though, like you said, it's interesting that you feel like you could have done it, you could have pushed through and done it, but you knew in your heart that the sacrifice wasn't worth it. And again, it comes back to that lifestyle change of what is more important to you. And I know a lot of younger athletes, myself included, can sometimes think that specific moment is more important than your entire lifestyle and longevity of running. But at the end of the day, there's always another race, and you've kind of come to prove that.
Exactly. Exactly. There is always another race, and it's just not worth it. I see runners all the time, and they're pushing through things. And it's like, your body is telling you, listen to what it's telling you. Mm-hmm. You have to just pay attention. And I think, as an example, when I was younger, when I first started running, I never stretched. My husband used to stretch, and my friend that I ran with used to stretch, and I used to just take off and run. And then as you get older, you realize you have to listen to your body. You have to stretch, you know, otherwise there's going to be some consequences.
So you do make that a regular part of your training now?
I do now. Every day when I finish running, I do at least 5 or 10 minutes of stretching, just, you know, loosening up the body. I'll try to do like the skipping and the hopping and do some backward runs and that sort of thing also. And it, you know what? It also keeps the joy in running. It keeps it fun. Yep, you know, you look like a kid skipping down the road. But it's just so important.
Mm-hmm. And it is, you know, you look at a child and you see them seeing running as something that is joy. They run across the room and you see that smile on their face. But a lot of the time we can forget that and think that, see it as a chore, or see it as, oh, I still have this to go. That's great that you are able to look back and, you know, take some advice from children and have fun with it.
And I would say, if running becomes a second job, I'm giving it up. I don't need it. So you do. I think my advice to runners all the time is just keep the joy in it, keep the fun in it. We're just children out there playing. That's really what we are. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so you have to keep that fun in it.
Yeah, no, that's great. So do you have a specific strength program that you do with exercises to supplement your training? Or do you just go in, as you said, if something is bothering you, to strengthen that particular area?
Well, I have a functionality, I guess to call them a functionality coach right now. And it's just all about, like, for instance, keeping the hips loose. That's the tightest part for me, just keeping the hips loose. And when we're running, it's always a linear movement. So, but we have to do other things. So you have to keep your proprioceptors responding in your ankles and your body if you're doing cross country. So it's different professionals for different things depending on where you are. One of the most common things I see with runners is we have a body mass loss after age 50, and I think it's something like 2-3% a year. And you see with people with their body mass dwindling because all they're doing is running. Well, for instance, you know, if you're losing the mass, say, around your shoulders and you see that kind of emaciated look, you don't have the strength in your upper body to propel you forward. So you have to do something. You can't just run. I mean, you can, but the slowing down is going to be at a greater rate, I think. Mm-hmm. And then you're working against your body and running becomes less joyful.
Exactly. And how many times a week would you say you incorporate those exercises into your training?
I try to do a workout with my trainer, the functionality, at least once a week. I'll do it twice a week if it's not too close to races and that sort of thing. But typically I'd say it's about once a week is probably what I average.
Okay. Yep. We find that's really important. And we actually have a strength program at Runners Connect that we are always recommending to people because it is important. And I myself as a runner really, you know, see the importance in it. But people often think that you can get away with not doing those little exercises, but they are, like you say, it fundamentally important to being able to run and keeping that joy in the running. So you're right
on. It's not a luxury. I think people think of it as a luxury. It's not a luxury. I think of it more as a necessity.
Mm-hmm. Wow. What an amazing group of people to learn from. I'm curious, what was your biggest takeaway or your favorite lesson learned? Please share it with us on Facebook or Instagram, as we would love to chat with you about it and continue that conversation. As always, thank you so much for listening to the Run to the Top podcast. I'm your host, Finn Melanson. You know, our mission here is to help you become a better runner with every episode. Please consider continuing the conversation by connecting with me on Instagram at WasatchFinn and the rest of our team at Runners Connect. Also, consider supporting our show for free with a rating on the Spotify and Apple podcast players. And lastly, if you love the show and you want bonus content like behind-the-scenes experiences, our guests, and premier access to contests and giveaways, then subscribe to our newsletter by going to runnersconnect.com/podcast. Until next time, happy training.